Welcome to SD Europe's first ever podcast. My name is Luke Cox. I run SD Europe's communications. In this first edition, we'll be interviewing Ayodeji Edebono, the Secretary General of Sandlanders Football. For those not familiar, Sandlanders is a continental organisation and network of fan-owned football clubs and supporters groups in Africa. For those new to SD Europe, we are a not-for-profit, democratically run organisation working for greater supporter involvement in football and the sustainable development of the game.
Deji, thank you ever so much for joining us. We really do appreciate you speaking to us about Sandlanders and your experience. So just to begin with, could you just say hello to the listeners and give a little introduction on yourself?
Yeah, hello everyone. My name is Ayodeji. I'm Secretary General for Sandlanders Football. It's nice to be on the podcast today. I've been involved with Sandlanders since 2012 when I interned with Sandlanders at the SD office in central London. And at the end of my internship, I stayed in touch with Paul, continued in my role as a volunteer. And sometimes in January 2018, I became General Secretary for the organization.
Obviously, those sort of in the loop, you know, members of SD Europe are, you know, fairly familiar with Sandlanders, but, you know, maybe for those that aren't, could you give us a little bit of an introduction to who Sandlanders are?
Sandlanders is basically like SD Europe in Africa. We work with supporter-owned African clubs, supporter groups and associations, focusing on development of good governance, sustainable club infrastructure and supporter interest across the continent. At the moment, we have 10 member clubs in 9 African countries, namely Tunisia, Zambia, Zanzibar, Uganda, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Ghana, Kenya, and Nigeria. So about 10,000 members in 10 clubs across 9 countries on the continent. And we're looking at bringing more supporter groups in several other countries to join our association as well.
Wow, it's incredible, really, to think there's such a spread. And yeah, just for the benefit of the listeners, we had a little chat yesterday before we did this recording today, and you were telling me about the fact that, you know, there's such a diversity, obviously, across the whole continent, and, you know, in terms of your members as well, you know, you have some that are the lower levels of football, and then some right up there.
Yeah, true. Like I said earlier, we have 10 member clubs across 9 countries in Africa. Our biggest club, obviously, is CS Sfaxien in the Tunisian League. This is the club that regularly compete on the continent. They play in the African Champions League and sometimes the African Confederations Cup. That is Africa's version of the Europa League. About 10,000 members, they have 9,000 members. So they are our biggest club And the supporter group now, the socios, 9,000 registered members, annual revenue of about €300,000 as of 2018. That is at one end of the spectrum. And you have another end of the spectrum, a club like Gwengra Town in Liberia with just 168 members. They play non-league football and a regional league and zero annual revenue. You know, basically everything they get is from donors, contributions from Sandlanders itself, and that's how they keep going. Donations of materials, funding, so it's on both sides of the spectrum for us, really. And of course you have some clubs like stationery stores in Nigeria, like Keita in Ghana, like Kilimani City, who are somewhere in the middle, who could take care of themselves to some extent, yes.
Obviously, it must be quite a challenge when you've got such a vast continent to try and keep this network together. So, as you say, is that mainly done online?
Yeah, it's basically done online. And unlike Europe, where you can travel from Belgium and drive across to Holland, and you can basically move around the Western Europe in a few hours, and travel is cheap, it's not like that in Africa. I am based in Lagos. If I want to fly to Accra, which is a 40 minutes flight, I'll probably be needing up to $300 to fly. That is expensive, you know. Mm-hmm. And if I want to go to Tunisia for socios, flight, return flight from Lagos to Tunis is in the region of $900. Same if I want to go to Zambia for Kalingalinga or Zanzibar, you know, so travel is expensive. So that is a challenge in itself. So a lot of our work is done online. But we're trying, the plan this year was to have an EGM in a physical location. We've got some funding now, thanks to SD Europe. We've got some funding from the European Union. So one of our plans this year is, well, because over the last 3-4 years, we usually have the AGM online. So we're planning to have it in a physical location at the facility of one of our member clubs, where other people can travel down to that place and we can cover their cost to travel down to attend this AGM.
It is quite something, you're right, because it must be such a challenge to try and keep this network together and engaged when you can only do it online. But, you know, to actually bring them together in the same room, you know, from, you know, my experience with SD Europe, that's where the magic happens, if you like. You can get that extra level of understanding with people, build relationships, and that's when things really start to flourish. So, you know, it's quite exciting times for Sandlanders then, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, one of the reasons why we want to do that is the fact that it goes beyond just having a meeting. We want to have like a weekend together where we can rub minds. The big clubs can give some lessons to the small clubs on how they can get bigger, how they can do things. And we also want some sort of interaction, some collaboration between the clubs.
It would be really interesting to just sort of get a bit of an idea of what football club ownership is like in general. I know that's really difficult to summarize, you know, 50 odd countries. You know, or maybe if there's some instances, you know, do clubs maybe face some of the issues that clubs do in Europe, you know?
So this is one of the reasons why we are promoting our supporter ownership at Sandlanders, because most of these ownership systems are not sustainable. The moment the person is gone or is no longer interested, doesn't have enough financial muscle to continue to pull the club goes down. And it's the fans that suffer. You know, when you are emotionally attached to a club and suddenly the club is dying, the club is struggling, there's nothing you can do about it. It's painful to the fans. You know, my hometown club is owned by the state government, and we've had highs and lows. When we have governors who love sports, then they will give a lot of money and the clubs will do very well. And when we have governors who don't love sports, the club will struggle and probably get relegated as well. So this emotional roller coaster is not particularly good for the fans. So which is why we are trying to.
And for the audience, who's your, just remind who your club is again, Deji?
Sunshine Stars. That's my hometown club, the club I support in the Nigerian League. So, which is why we at Sandlanders, we are preaching sustainable ownership system.
Often the case is, you do worry that the fact that you may have an owner that could be a very good owner at a football club, but at the end of the day, as you say, if he passes on or, you know, circumstances affect his business that, you know, he earns the money from to put into the football club, then the life of a club can become very uncertain, but ultimately the supporters will always be there.
You know, interesting fact about that, on this day 30 years ago, the Nigerian League changed from amateur status to professional status. Of the 16 clubs that started at the time, I think only 2 or 3 of them are still in existence today. Most of the other ones have changed hands, or the owners have sold them, or the club have gone into extinction. I mean, just 30 years ago. So that tells you that we need to get the ownership structure right, make it more sustainable, so that we can have a situation where we have clubs that are 100 years old, 200 years old, not a club that shows up today, flash in the pan, and 5, 6, 7, 10 years down the line, the club is no more. The rates of turnover of clubs, especially in this part of the world, is too high.
So, you know, you say you've got, was it 10 fan-owned clubs in the Sandlanders network? Was it 10, did you say?
10 clubs.
And what is the route that these clubs have gone down to become fan-owned? Is it a case that it was a club that was privately owned and then became fan-owned, or was it a case that they were sort of started from scratch?
Different ones. Take for instance, the first club, the very first club on the Sandlanders network is Keita in Ghana. Actually, Keita Football Club was founded in 2002. And sometimes in 2004, while Paul Jones, who is head of Sandlanders, was working in Ghana, he spent some time with the club, helped out, did some volunteer work. So he did advise them at the time that the ownership structure they ran wasn't sustainable. So that was when they came up with the idea of turning the club to a fully owned fan club, you know, and modeled based on the Barcelona model. That's how the club changed to a fan-owned club in 2004. And after a while, a few other clubs across the continent started making inquiries. How did you guys do this? We are interested in this. And eventually, this month, 10 years ago, Sandlanders as an organization was founded, modeled after SD, so and became an umbrella organization for this club. So for a club like Keita, it's fully owned by their fans, even though it started as being privately owned, but they sold it out to fans. However, in the last few years, the contribution from the fans is not enough to meet the budgetary requirement of the club. So they have been taught to see, okay, can we go the route of the German league, the 40+1, where 49+1, right? Or 50+1, sorry, the 50%+1 rule, where we get to own 50%+1, then we can sell 49% to maybe a corporate organization. They have been taught about that. Stationery stores in Nigeria started as a privately owned club. It's still privately owned, but they surpass trust. Once in a while, pitching to help the club, to support the club. So it varies, like I said, that we have such a diverse portfolio. So it varies from club to club. You know, Gbemgba Town is 100% owned by the fan. Kilimani City used to be owned by the Kilimani City Council, but it's now 100% owned by the fans as well. So it's different. The case of each club is unique. Kalingalinga started as an NGO and is still 100% NGO as well. So it's different for each club.
Now, my next question is a bit sort of hypothetical, maybe a bit philosophical, I don't know. But, you know, what, as an organisation, you know, as a network, what is your sort of, you know, long-term vision? What is the sort of promised land, you know, the oasis of football across the continent? What would be a point that would be the absolute best situation for club football?
For us, is to be able to establish sustainable clubs all over Africa. Clubs with proper governance, with their own infrastructure. Infrastructure is a big problem across the continent. With more clubs adopting the supporter-owned or part-owned model. And to be able to have, I mean, the continent is big. To be able to have offices in maybe one or two places, physical offices with staff. Because at the moment, I work part-time. Every other person working for Sandlanders is a volunteer. And most of the things is we do it online. We can do more than we're doing if we have the funding. Thankfully, thanks to our partners, SD, who got us the funding last year from the EU, which will help us achieve some of our goals for 2020 and 2021. With more funding, we can do more. We can reach out to more people. We can support our clubs more. We can achieve more on the continent, like you said. It's, for us, the end goal will be more clubs to probably be on every country. Right now, we're only 9 countries. We have members in 9 countries out of 54. To be able to have a member in every country on the continent, our members should be properly structured, should have their own infrastructure, should be sustainable so that 100 years from now, I'll be gone, Paul will be gone, some other people will be running Sandlanders, Sandlanders will still be working, and all of these clubs will still be in existence.
Well, it sounds fantastic to me. Sounds fantastic to me. Yeah. You know, it would be great to get a bit more of an idea of, you know, so that's the absolute perfect case scenario end goal. Yes. And, yes, you know, you are where you are now as an organization. Are you able to just tell me maybe a little bit about some of the challenges that you're facing at the moment? You know, what are the hurdles that you're trying to negotiate to keep pushing forwards?
Our biggest challenge would be funding. Yeah, because like I said, I'm like the only staff and I'm a part-time staff as well. Every other person, Paul, Michael, every other person volunteers their time. So we can do more if we have our full-time staff who work and get paid. So that way they don't have to divide their time. We can achieve more. We can achieve more if we have like a physical office, if we can get to have our meetings regularly, like SD Europe, where you can have a meeting where the members show up in a physical location. We have to be able to do that. We can do more if we can support fund the project of our smaller members more.
You know, obviously here in Europe, the pandemic has, you know, severely affected football, you know, as a culture and as an industry. And it would be quite interesting, you know, to get a bit of an insight to hear how it's affected, you know, football on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I assume leagues have been, you know, postponed or maybe cancelled, but are players still training? What's the situation?
Nobody's training. Football has totally stopped in Africa, even though some leagues like Nigeria and Ghana, they are proposing a restart, but there's no date yet. Zambia is proposing a restart for probably next month. Tunisia has said it will restart in August. For some countries, they've totally cancelled, like Kenya, like Ethiopia. The season has been cancelled and it will just start from the 2020-2021. So it's different for different countries. Countries who hope to restart don't have a date yet. Training has not started, has not resumed. Countries who have cancelled, they are just waiting for when the government of their country gives them the all clear for their players to return training so they can start pre-season for the 2020-2021 season. So basically, football has stopped all over the continent. Even though in Europe, some countries are like Spain, training has resumed, Germany, training has resumed. But in Africa, no country in Africa has resumed training at all. Everything is on standstill at the moment, yes. On a continental level, that has led to cancellation of some tournaments. You know, the Chan tournament, which is like the Cup of Nations for players based on the continent, was supposed to start last month in Cameroon, but that has been pushed forward. The CAF Champions League was at the quarterfinal stage when football stopped, so no one knows what CAF wants to do about that. And of course, the qualifiers for next year's African Championship should have started in March, but that is yet to start as well with no date in view. So basically, COVID has really, really affected African football, just the way it has affected football all over the world.
And do you have any concerns about any of the fan-owned clubs in your networks? Because obviously, if they're not playing, they're not going to be, you know, receiving any revenue from matches or anything. Are there any serious concerns?
Yeah, we are concerned and we are reaching out to them to find out what their plans are. You know, some of these clubs, it's not as if they make a lot of revenue from actually playing, but I mean, the little they get is also something, you know. And being inactive for this long is beginning to tell on them. So we're trying to find out how they're doing, what their plans are, and should football restart or should the season be cancelled when they have to go straight to their season. So we're trying to find out what their plans are and in what way we can actually help them survive this situation.
Okay, brilliant. Well, I think that's about everything that we've got time for, Deji. So again, thank you ever so much for taking the time to have a chat with us. It's been, for me personally, it's been fascinating and I've really, really enjoyed listening to you talk about everything. You know, it would be great, maybe a finishing statement, you know, if anybody wants to find anything out, you know, more about Sandlanders or any of your members, is there anywhere that they can go to find this?
Yeah, they can simply go to our website, it's sandlanders.com. You find the information about all our 10 members there, about what we do as an organization. You find our contact address there. You can contact us if you want. Email address is there. So you can probably contact our clubs as well, because they are, we have links to either their website or their Facebook pages up on our website. So to get to know more about what we do, who we are as an organization, just go to our website, sandlanders.com.
Okay, wonderful. That's fantastic. And you'll see, you'll have your phone ringing off the hook now.
hopefully.
Yes.
It's been a wonderful experience. This is my first podcast, actually. So it's been a wonderful experience. And I also like to use this opportunity to say thank you to SDU for the support they've given us over the years, for helping us get funding for this year and working on some other funding for some of our projects coming years as well. We really do appreciate your support, and trust me, we will not be able to do a majority of what we're doing without the support of SDU.
Well, yeah, you know, it's going to be exciting times for those listening. Sandlanders are involved in SD Europe's Fans Matter project. So, you know, it's going to be quite an exciting 12 months. And, you know, without a doubt, if we get an opportunity to speak to Deji again, we definitely will.
Definitely. Anytime you want to speak to me, just make the call and I'm sure.
Wow, that was a fascinating start to SD Europe's podcast career. We can't thank Deji enough for speaking to us. With regards to the next podcast, this is something we are working on doing more regularly, and we will keep you updated, so be sure to follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube and SoundCloud, and you can find us by simply searching for SD Europe. To find out more about SD Europe and our work, visit our website, which is www.sdeurope.eu. Thanks for listening. Until next time.